6:40 greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
Let's kick off once again with UEFA Champions League football. Lionel Messi and Barcelona face a big challenge later Wednesday evening when they try to overturn a 3-0 first leg deficit against visiting Juventus. Five-time European champion Barcelona has already proven it can rally from even bigger deficits in the tournament. During the round of 16, Barca came back from a 4-0 first leg loss to beat French club Paris Saint-Germain 6-5 on aggregate. In the other quarterfinal match this evening, Monaco takes a 3-2 first leg lead into a home match against Borussia Dortmund of Germany. In action Tuesday, the two Spanish powerhouses based in Madrid, 2016 finalist Atletico Madrid and defending champion Real Madrid, both advanced to the semifinals. Atletico reached the semifinals for the third time in four seasons by ending Leicester's fairy tale journey, drawing 1-1 in England to advance 2-1 on aggregate. Saul scored the opener for Atletico, and Jamie Vardy equalized for Leicester City in the 61st minute. At the post-match news conference, Leicester's manager, Craig Shakespeare, shared his feelings.
Well, disappointment, obviously, to go out, but immensely proud of the performance tonight. And I thought we ran an excellent team in Madrid. We gave them a really good shot at it. And as you say, the players can be immensely proud of their performance, but they're very disappointed to ultimately go out.
Meanwhile, 10-man Bayern Munich also went out after a 4-2 loss to host Real Madrid in extra time. Portuguese star Cristiano Ronaldo scored a hat trick for Real, sealing a 6-3 aggregate victory in controversial circumstances. Bayern fans said Ronaldo's second goal was clearly offside. And they also disputed Arturo Vidal's second yellow card offense, which reduced Bayern to 10 men. Bayern's Italian manager Carlo Ancelotti said his club was affected by the refereeing decisions, and he asked UEFA to institute a video referee for this caliber of match. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the sunny side of sports on the Voice of America.
The Voice of America.
VOA. If you were to talk to us from the deepest, better part of the bottom of your heart.
Hello, I am Shaka Sali, the host of Straight Talk Africa from the Voice of America. Each Wednesday night, I'll put you in touch with newsmakers and experts as they, you and I, talk about the most important social and political issues in Africa. Shaka Sali saying, I'll be waiting for your call Wednesday night on Straight Talk Africa from the Voice of America.
If you would like to leave a voicemail for possible use on a future Sunny Side of Sports broadcast, please call 1-202-205-9942. Once again, that number, 1-202-205-9942.
VOA!
When you hear the VOA identification, press 60. And please include your name and where you are calling from. Voice of
America. Hello, this is Magnus Chisholm calling from Imo State in Nigeria. I love listening to the Sunny Side of Sports. It's always a daily delight of listening to the Sunny Side of Sports. Once again, Magnus Chisholm and we are calling from Imo State in Nigeria and wishing all the Sunny Side of Sports listeners all the best. Bye.
Turning to African athletics, Kenya has a very proud pedigree at the Boston Marathon. Since Ibrahim Hussein won the first of his three Boston titles in 1988, 12 more Kenyan men have been victorious in the world's oldest annual marathon. The latest to win is Jeffrey Kirui, who crossed the finish line Monday in 2 hours, 9 minutes, and 37 seconds. For his triumph, the 24-year-old Kenyan received a silver trophy, a gilded olive wreath, and a $150,000 first-place prize. At the post-race news conference in Boston, Kirui had this to say.
First of all, I would like to take this opportunity to thank you for inviting me during the event, this event for Boston Marathon. I'm so happy, so grateful for I compete, and it was my first time to be in Boston. Before I was doing track and field events in 10,000, 5,000 and half marathon. And this is my third marathon, and I'm very happy for winning Boston again. I'm feeling good. My body, it was prepared for this competition. I was well prepared together with my coach, Renato, and that is my coach who helped me mostly in Kenya, a place called Kiringet.
As Jeffrey Kirui mentioned, this was his first time competing in the Boston Marathon. He says he was well aware of Kenya's proud history in the race.
To come here to Boston, I knew that I'm coming to face my colleagues who have run many times in Boston. So I was not aware that I'm going to win, but according to my training, I knew also that I will challenge also some of that champions who have been competing here.
Monday marked the 121st running of the annual Boston Marathon, but wounds stemming from the 2013 bombings are still open. Rafael Sakov of the Voice of America's Russian service tells us the story of one survivor who became a motivational speaker and wrote a book.
4 years after the Boston Marathon bombings, Rebecca Gregory, who lost a leg in the attack, is back in the city to launch her memoir. It's called Taking My Life Back.
I've exposed my whole life, not just the marathon story and the story of how I got blown up, but how I even was led up to that point. And so it's the best thing I've ever done for myself.
Rebecca has become a popular motivational speaker, but she still remembers that life-changing moment for her and for her son, Noah.
We were right there in the action, and Noah, my 5-year-old, had gotten really bored, and so I told him to sit down on my feet, so that's where he was when the bomb in the backpack went off 3 feet behind us. And later I learned that because he was sitting down and not standing, my body was essentially the shield for him between him and the bomb, and I took everything in the back of the legs, and that's ultimately what saved his life.
Rebecca underwent more than a dozen surgeries to save her leg, but without success. So she chose to have it amputated. 2 years ago, she made headlines when she ran 5 last miles of the Boston Marathon with the help of a special prosthesis.
She's beyond an inspiration with everything that she's gone through and the strength that she still has and that she's passing on to others. And now she's a motivational speaker, helping others who might be, you know, struggling with things in life. And it's just, it's amazing what she's been able to accomplish.
Rebecca Gregory was also among the survivors who testified at the trial of convicted bomber Dzhokhar Tsarnaev. He is appealing a death sentence.
Why they did do what they did and everything, it doesn't really matter because it happened, and I can never go back to before terrorism entered our lives. The death sentence wasn't important. It was, what was important was that he was behind bars and he could not hurt anyone else. And so that was really, you know, why I gave my testimony, why I was a part of the trial, because I wanted to make sure that he was not able to hurt anyone.
Despite what has happened to her here, Rebecca says that Boston will now always be her second home. And she says she has many new friends in the city, including nurses, who have helped her to get back to life. Rebecca did not stay in Boston for this year's marathon. After a 2-week-long book tour, she went home to Texas to be with her family. She was so badly injured, doctors told her it was unlikely she could have more children, but she gave birth to a baby girl last May. Rafael Sakov, Voice of America, Boston.
Music time in Africa. Tune in to your local radio station Fridays at 900 and Saturdays and Sundays at 900, 15, 20 and 2200 Universal Time. That's what's up.
Why? But tell me where you going.
What?
Why do we get the mama shop Milan?
The mama shop you land?
The mama shop Milan. The mission.
My name is Segun Adeyemi, nicknamed Segun Dot on the Spot Adeyemi, by former VOA Chief of English to Africa, Barry Mon. I worked as a stringer for the VOA for 29 years, during which I hosted an African sports program, Nightline Africa Sports. I stopped working for VOA in 2016 when I was appointed special assistant to the Nigerian president. My long years with the VOA and the wide reach of the radio station raised my profile, gave me much leverage, and opened my eyes to what is possible. The Sunny Side of Sports, the popular program hosted by Sonny Young, was my main platform as a stringer until I became the host of Nightline Africa Sports in my last 10 years with the VOA. Thank you, VOA, for a great opportunity, and congratulations on this 75th anniversary.
Voice of America!
Joining us once again on the Sunny Side of Sports is the Voice of America's social media reporter, Andrew Palcheski. Andrew, we enjoyed your reporting from Boston on Monday.
Thank you very much, Sunny. I enjoyed being there. It was such a great time up there, such great energy from all the competitors. It was really a great marathon. It shows why it's been the longest running marathon in the U.S.
Lots of excitement in Boston. What's trending in the sports world, Andrew?
Well, I had my plan all set up. I had everything planned out I was going to talk about, and then not too long before we got into the studio, breaking news, Serena Williams posting to Snapchat a picture with kind of a full belly and the caption 20 weeks. So the speculation is that Serena Williams is expecting her first child. Now,
Congratulations, Serena.
Now, she hasn't confirmed this yet, but I think she's done everything but confirm it, posting that picture with the looking rather pregnant in that picture. She'd be due around September 6th, so out for the French Open, Wimbledon, and the U.S. Open. So a lot of people on social media noting this and saying, congrats to Serena, but also congrats to the rest of the women's tennis players who now have a shot to win because Serena is going to be out for the next three Grand Slam tournaments. A lot of talk about the dates and timing of this. She says 20 weeks. That would mean that Serena was pregnant when she won the Australia Open in January. She would have been about 10 weeks pregnant. So people saying that she may be the first female athlete, of course, I guess you have to be female to be pregnant, but the first athlete to win in tennis a Grand Slam tournament while pregnant. So that would be very big news. Another mark that Serena has set in her career.
Serena Williams, 35 years old. I guess the question now, will she continue her professional tennis career?
And that's what a lot of people are talking about as well. And the name Kim Clijsters is coming up a lot because Kim Clijsters took some time off from tennis to have a baby and then came back to win the U.S. Open twice. So it can be done. Several other women have done that. They've come back. We talked about Victoria Azarenka, who just had a baby not too long ago. She's getting ready to come back to the tour. So it can be done in this day and age with the careers being prolonged that you can take some time off, start a family, and then come back into form.
Andrew, you mentioned all the excitement in Boston and the Boston Marathon. It's been a couple days, but I think some of the stories from that big race still trending.
Absolutely. I was leaving Boston yesterday. You just saw even the excitement continue after that first Monday. You know, everyone was still wearing those jackets that the runners get when they finish that they can purchase. And you saw people on the street go up to these people in these jackets and just say, congratulations, great job. Total strangers, but just congratulating them on completing the marathon and doing such great work. And someone getting congratulations too, Catherine Switzer. Catherine Switzer, 50 years ago in 1967, she was the first woman to run the race wearing a number. There was actually a woman that ran the year prior, but Catherine Switzer got the bib number, ran the race officially, tried to get through and almost got stopped by Jock Semple, who was the Boston Marathon organizer, tried to pull her out of the race because women weren't allowed to run the race at the time. Bobby Gibb being that first woman to run the year prior. But Catherine Switzer, 50 years later, ran the marathon again on Monday at the age of 70 years old. And some numbers to throw at you. When she ran it 50 years ago, she had a time of 4 hours, 20 minutes. When she ran it this Monday, 50 years later and at the age of 70, she did it in 4 hours, 44 minutes. So not too far off her original time 50 years later. That's pretty good. Only losing about half a minute per year. But that famous picture of her almost being stopped in the race and almost being pulled out of the race and her completing it, she's wearing bib number 261. That was the same number that she wore on Monday. And after Monday, that bib is going to be retired. So no one will ever wear that bib again in the Boston Marathon, number 261. It's her number, and she's keeping it with her.
Kudos to Catherine Switzer. Kudos also to Ben Beach, who we heard on Monday's special Boston Marathon show. Ben went out and ran his 50th consecutive Boston Marathon, and he did indeed finish. I saw one photo on Facebook of Uta Pippig, a three-time Boston Marathon champion, congratulating Ben after he crossed the finish line. So, Ben, if you're listening tonight, way to go, buddy, and maybe not 50 more, but a few more Bostons probably in Ben's future. He has talked about wanting to continue the race and keep going.
I have no doubt that he will. Absolutely.
What else is trending out there, Andrew?
We'll stick with the marathon for just another minute. Adidas in a bit of hot water. You know, we've talked about some of the public relations disasters that have gone on in recent weeks with United Airlines and other companies, Pepsi. Well, Adidas is having their own little PR disaster because they sent out a marketing email to the runners after the race that said, congratulations on surviving the Boston Marathon. Now, they meant this to be congratulations on getting through this grueling race. You did it. However, after the bombings 4 years ago, surviving the Boston Marathon has another darker meaning. So lots of criticism for Adidas on social media saying that was a poor choice of words. To Adidas's credit, they quickly responded and said, "We are incredibly sorry. Clearly, there was no thought given to the insensitive email subject line that we sent Tuesday to the runners." So they did come out and say that they were very sorry about that. I don't think it's going to jeopardize their sponsorship of the race. They have all of the gear and everything that they create for the race is done by Adidas. The jackets I was talking about a little while ago have the three Adidas stripes down the arms. So I don't think that'll affect that, but is getting them some negative attention on social media a couple days after the race.
Also, kind of a negative story out of Boston, Andrew, involving a former star player of the New England Patriots Football Club. Tell our VOA listeners about that.
Yeah, this involves Aaron Hernandez. He was a former tight end with the New England Patriots, a football star. And back in 2015, he was convicted of first-degree murder. He was recently found just a couple weeks ago not guilty of two other murder charges he was facing. And then word early today that Aaron Hernandez committed suicide in his jail cell outside of Boston. Lots of attention on this story over the past couple years. This kind of fall from grace. In fact, there was one tweet that someone put out. They said, "Aaron Hernandez drafted at 20, multimillionaire at 22, convicted of murder at 25, dead at 27, just 27 years old. So really, you know, a tragic story on so many levels, with a lot of conflict from fans and teammates. Hernandez had so much promise, they said, and potential, but it was wasted. And because of the circumstances of what he did, there's a lot of conflict about how to feel about his death as far as sympathy. We do see a lot of football players coming forward and expressing their sympathy, though. Mike Pouncey being one of them. He's a center with the Miami Dolphins, and he played football at the University of Florida with Aaron Hernandez, and he put up a post on Instagram where he said, "Through right and wrong, we never left each other's side. My heart hurts." But a lot of, you know, that the same themes of this wasted potential, tragedy. You're seeing a lot of these describing Aaron Hernandez. And a lot of talk about how this is going to be covered in the future. It's already talk about sports documentaries that are going to be made about his life. This tragic story is almost like a movie if you look at the circumstances behind it, this fall from grace. So a lot of tension on Aaron Hernandez. Of course, the New England Patriots play not too far outside of Boston. They are the Boston team. So a lot of attention in Boston about this story as well.
What else is trending out there, Andrew?
Well, we'll stick with Boston. It's a lot of Boston that we're covering in the past few days, but duly so because there are a lot of stories coming out of Boston in the sports world, and this is yet another one. Of course, the New England Patriots came from behind 25 points down at the Super Bowl to win it, first ever Super Bowl in overtime back in February, and so they will visit the White House, as teams do here in the U.S., to meet with the president and get official congratulations. They're going to be the first pro sports team to visit the White House after winning a championship in the Trump presidency, and that has created a bit of controversy with some of the New England Patriot players. Some of them had said they were going to boycott this White House visit, that they weren't going to attend, they didn't want to meet President Trump. And then this morning, quarterback Tom Brady, who in the past had talked about his friendship with Donald Trump, and that was a big issue during the presidential campaign, quarterback Tom Brady said he will not be attending today. So a bit of a surprise. He said in a post on his social media, said, "In light of some recent developments, I'm unable to attend today's ceremony as I am attending to some personal family matters. Hopefully, if we accomplish the goal of winning a championship in future years, we will be back on the South Lawn of the White House again soon." Now, a lot of people talking about this, wondering if it's a political move. Tom Brady got a lot of flack for expressing his friendship for Donald Trump, for supporting Donald Trump. But Brady's mother is also battling cancer, so there is a family element to this. So there's speculation that that might be the reason that she may be not doing well and he wants to spend some time with her. And one person, as we said, big sports day in Boston, tweeting out, "Between Hernandez's death and Brady not going to the White House, it's a weird day for Boston sports." So these stories getting a lot of attention up north in Boston between the Marathon and the New England Patriots. Lots to talk about with Boston sports.
Andrew Palcheski, the Voice of America's social media reporter. Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you.
And that wraps up the April 19th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Nick Ivanoff. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports. I get it.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The Partnership for Research on Ebola Virus in Liberia, known as PREVAIL, announced this month the expansion of the Ebola vaccine study at Redemption Hospital in Monrovia. The study will assess three different vaccine strategies in an effort to find which show the most promise to prevent or quickly control future Ebola outbreaks. It is a continuation of a previous vaccine effort that began in Liberia in February 2015. The start of the expansion of the Ebola vaccine study in Liberia, announced on April 3rd, follows a similar effort of the multi-country study which started in Guinea on March 27, 2017. An extension of the study in Sierra Leone is being planned. This is the first large-scale clinical study being coordinated by the International Partnership for Research on Ebola Vaccination, or PREVAC. The study originated with the West African Clinical Research Consortium, established in 2015 by scientific leaders in Liberia, Guinea, and Sierra Leone to focus on research activities that could prevent or help respond to future Ebola outbreaks. The PREVAIL group includes the West African Consortium and its international sponsors and partners, the French National Institute of Health and Medical Research, sponsor for Guinea, the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, part of the U.S. National Institutes of Health, sponsor for Liberia, and the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine, sponsor of the planned extension in Sierra Leone, a collaboration with the University of Sierra Leone's College of Medicine and Allied Health Sciences. Another PREVAIL consortium partner is the non-governmental organization Alliance for International Medical Action in Guinea. The study, which in Liberia will be called PREVAIL 5, will be conducted in two parts. The first part, called PREVAC, and now underway in Guinea and Liberia, will enroll up to 600 people 12 years and older. The second part, expected to start in the second half of 2017, aims to enroll 4,900 people, including 3,500 healthy men and women aged 18 years and older and 1,400 children over 1 year old. The United States is proud to work with Liberia and other international partners to combat the deadly threat posed by Ebola to the people of Liberia and the region.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, I am Shaka Sali. Join me on Straight Talk Africa every Wednesday as we discuss topics of special interest to Africans, including politics, economic development, press freedom, health, social issues, and conflict resolution. Take your pick. Watch on television, log on to the internet, or listen right here on the radio.
Hello, Africa. This is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
The lyrics could be French,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic, etc.
It is the beat,
the African beat that counts.
The beat does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct
and adhesive.
It binds us together.
African beat on The Voice of America, Mondays through Fridays, 0900 and 2000 Universal Time,
with David Bandy.